Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily, and sometimes more than daily, politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by Jonathan Walker of the Birmingham Post and Mail and Newcastle Chronicle and Journal, and Jennifer Williams, the politics and investigations editor of the Manchester Evening News. Now, as you might have guessed from our selection of guests today, we're going to be discussing how the Tories are going to be faring in this election campaign in the North and the Midlands. Now, a key part of the Tory strategy this election campaign has been to break down the so-called red wall of Labour seats in the North and Midlands that could potentially vote Tory, but have historically backed Labour for a long time. And it's more than likely that the result of this election will be decided whether they can break down these seats to make up for losses, potential losses in the south of the country in more remainery areas. Now, starts off, Jonathan, you very helpfully wrote at the beginning of this election campaign about the Midland seats that could decide this election. Can you sort of tell us a bit about them and the kind of things that makes them vulnerable to being taken by the Tories after being Labour for so long?
Well, the seats that are most vulnerable in the West Midlands are not in Birmingham itself, but in the surrounding area. So in the Black Country in particular, where you have a number of little small towns, very industrial conurbation, where people voted overwhelmingly for Brexit, and where they've had a history, if you go back far enough, of often having Conservative MPs, but where Labour have been dominant since 97 or as far back as 1992. Those are the types of seats where the Tories hope to do well, so places like Dudley and the West Bromwich seats. They've been helped by some defectors, Ian Austin, the Dudley North former Labour MP, urging people to vote Conservative. And more recently, Gisela Stewart, the Birmingham former Labour MP, has also been urging people to vote Conservative. I think one of the big problems Labour face is that people don't like Jeremy Corbyn. A lot of Labour candidates will admit this, that they face a lot of hostility on the doorstep when people talk about the party leader. And also Brexit is a factor, the fact that the Tories are clearly promising to deliver Brexit. But somewhat bizarrely, there are all sorts of other issues to do with policing, crime, housing. But Boris Johnson has somehow managed to not to take the blame for things that have sort of gone wrong over the past 9 years, and has done quite a good job of presenting himself as a person who might fix those problems, much to the shock and unhappiness of Labour candidates.
And Jennifer, in the North, and particularly around the Manchester and Greater Manchester area, you've similarly got seats that for years have backed Labour. Do you really see them sort of moving towards the Tories this time, after all this time that they've refused to back them?
It depends on the seat, but I recognise a lot of what John was just saying about seats in the West Midlands. It's the same sort of divide here, really. I mean, I would expect the Labour vote in Manchester, the five seats in Manchester itself, to kind of stay fairly steady, maybe even go up in some places. But when you start getting out to the more industrial towns that have seen a lack of investment, many of which voted to leave, you see a kind of a similar dynamic playing out. I think that there will be Labour seats that are kind of like not super marginals, but on the Tory hit list, which have got a reasonable chance of going, places like Bury South, which they tried to take last time, and similar to the Ian Austin case, Ivan Lewis became an independent, having previously been Labour, which should help the Conservatives in that seat. And actually, just before we started recording, Ivan Lewis put a statement out to say that he's actually telling people to vote Conservative, even though he's standing as an independent now. So all the people who sent out postal votes for him are probably not going to be particularly happy. But in seats like that, places like Hayward and Middleton, where Labour have got a majority of about, I think it's about 6,000 or 7,000, but UKIP came very close in a by-election in 2014, those kind of seats are definitely, you know, potentially takeable by the Conservatives. But the other interesting factor, I think, up here are those more comfortable, traditionally comfortable Labour seats, which are real heartland territory, where you could see the Conservatives eating into the Labour vote and maybe not taking it necessarily this time, but turning them into marginals. There were real concerns, or there have been real concerns on the ground in Lee, which is Andy Burnham's former seat. That's currently held by Labour by about 9,500 votes, previously been held by 15,000 plus. Very kind of strongly pro-Brexit area. definitely concern from Labour on the ground there, and YouGov MRP poll showed it neck and neck last week with the Tories slightly in front. And certainly when we've been out talking to voters, certainly there has been all of the things that John just said, the antipathy towards Jeremy Corbyn, the recognition of the Tory Brexit message and all the rest of it. But in Lee in particular, there seems to be a lot of antagonism towards Labour and a lot of people who are willing to ditch the habit of a lifetime and switch to Conservative or the Brexit Party.
John, how much of this do you think is, you know, you touched on Brexit before, but how much do you think this is definitely down to Brexit, or is kind of a long process of these sort of voters moving away from Labour over a long time?
Well, you've got something of a perfect storm for Labour. You've got Brexit and also Jeremy Corbyn. The Conservatives will say, and I think they're being quite sensible in this regard, that Brexit isn't enough to convince people to support them, but it has sort of opened people's minds to some extent. People are looking at politics in a different way, and the old sort of party loyalty has changed into perhaps a different type of tribal loyalty. So they're now willing to listen to the Tories and to consider voting Conservative in a way that they weren't in the past. Now, and then in that context, the fact that Labour is in quite a weak position, I would say, due to their leader, provides the opening for the Conservative Party. I think Labour's campaign has started off strong, but John McDonnell is in Birmingham today delivering a speech where he's highlighting Labour's plans to save households £6,700 a year through free broadband, through cheaper rail fares, cheaper fuel bills, cheaper water bills, free prescriptions. And Labour's campaign has had, in some cases, I think, the opposite effect to the one intended, because as you pile on offer after offer, you offer more free things after more free things, people stop feeling grateful or feeling that this would be a wonderful thing and become increasingly sceptical. So I don't think Labour's campaign is really working for them.
Have you found a similar, Jennifer, in that the Tories have made the NHS a big part of their campaign this time, and it's usually sort of a Labour traditional area? Do you think that's cutting through with these voters as well?
I think that the voters are hearing that there is noise around the NHS, and they are saying to us that the NHS is a priority for them. I think similarly to John, really, the amount of kind of background noise around the Labour campaign, because there were so many pledges that are being made, what you often hear from people in the kinds of places that we're talking about is how much will it cost. I went out to part of Ivan Lewis's current seat in Bury South to an area called Radcliffe, which is, it's a former mill town that has fallen on really hard times probably over the last kind of 20 or 30 years. The high street is massively in decline, a lot of local concern about crime rates and a lot of local concern about the NHS. But what people were saying to me again and again was, well, they're promising this, that and the other, but how are they going to pay for it? Now, I mean, in fairness, I think some of those people were talking about both parties, and I largely found people to be undecided and saying that they were going to be making their decision on the day. But the very fact that they weren't in what would be a traditional Labour area, weren't automatically just looking to Labour as being the solution to those concerns, I think should be a worry for the party.
It's an interesting point on the other side, I guess, though, John, in that the 2016 referendum was decided a lot by voters who don't normally vote in elections, who turned out this time. If there is a sort of increased apathy at the moment, do you think there is a risk for the Conservatives that their sort of core voters who they're trying to convince in these areas won't turn out this time?
Well, I know it's a big fear that the Conservatives have, is that the poll that showed them on course for a 68-seat majority, that's a YouGov poll, could lead people to think that there's no chance of Jeremy Corbyn becoming Prime Minister, so they can safely stay at home. I don't think in general terms, though, that there is going to be a lot of apathy in this election. I think that it's an important election. It hasn't been very exciting, but it's still seen as an important one. And of course, the last election in 97 saw quite a significant increase in turnout. People are interested in politics. They certainly were last time. And I think that might still continue into this election.
Jennifer, it'd be interesting to see your thoughts. I think you reported on when Boris Johnson came up north. We've talked a bit about the popularity of Jeremy Corbyn and how that's a problem. Do you find the opposite? I mean, what was your impression of his popularity with voters while he was up there?
I don't get the impression of a kind of this overwhelming enthusiasm for him either, actually. I mean, one of our reporters went out and did a profile in Hayward and Middleton, which is traditionally Labour, but as I said earlier on, is looking kind of closer perhaps than Labour would like. What it felt to me when I read the copy back was that people were interested in the policies potentially of what the parties were saying, but they were almost voting for various parties in spite of the leaders, and that kind of went on both counts, really. People were not necessarily very enthusiastic about Jeremy Corbyn, but we didn't get a huge amount of enthusiasm for Boris Johnson either. The thing that comes up quite a lot is that he's got a sense of humour, and people seem to quite like that. We're getting a lot of stuff around trust as well, and again, that's trust of both leaders. On the one hand, of Jeremy Corbyn, people saying, we don't trust him to be competent with the economy, we don't trust him to find all of this amount of money that, you know, they haven't necessarily registered all of the individual pledges, but they have registered that it's an enormous amount of money. But on the Boris Johnson side, they kind of don't really trust him either. So I wouldn't say that there's overwhelming enthusiasm for either of them. What I would say is that the kind of message I've got back again and again and again is that people feel like it's a choice between the devil and the deep blue sea.
I think that both party leaders have a lot of baggage, and this election would be very different if either of the parties had a truly popular and a truly maybe sort of new leader, a Blair or even a Cameron. Either party could win this election if they had somebody like that.
And John, you mentioned trust as well. I mean, you said that there's a lot of voters who probably don't believe a lot of Labour's promises, but they're coming out in their manifestos. Do you think the Tories have a similar problem? I know they've talked about big infrastructure projects, for example, in the North and Midlands. I realise they're reviewing HS2, but do you think that makes a difference as well?
I was struck in one of the debates when Boris Johnson was asked about WASPI women and what he would do for WASPI women. And he took the decision, and it seemed to me you could sort of see the gears whirring in his head as he tried to work out what to say. And he took the decision to say, no, we're not going to help them, we can't afford to help them. And he clearly decided that that was actually the most helpful thing to say in that situation, to play down what they were going to promise. I think there are issues with trust with Boris Johnson. The promise of 50,000 extra nurses has not really worked. They over-egged a pudding when they promised 40 new hospitals. So there is a scheme of a kind that involves 40 new hospitals, but it would have made a lot more sense to say we're going to build 6 new hospitals or refurbish 6 hospitals and then look at 34 others in the future, which does appear to be true. But because they've exaggerated somewhat, they do have a problem with trust. But I don't think it's going to do them in. I don't think it's going to do Boris too much harm in the long run.
Do you think it's similar up in Manchester, Jen?
Yeah, I just think that whether or not the trust issue harms Boris Johnson in this particular election, obviously we don't know yet to what extent that will be the case. But I do think there's a risk for the Tories that they're storing up a longer term problem here, where if they keep promising things and then in 5 years' time people turn around and say, well, you just literally didn't do any of that because it was an overpromise, whether it's 40 new hospitals and people. I mean, if you take North Manchester General Hospital, for example, on my patch, is, you know, woefully underinvested in. I mean, it's so badly in need of investment. It's essentially a Victorian estate that serves one of the poorest and most kind of health-deprived populations in the country. And on the one hand, you had Boris Johnson sort of saying, oh, it's going to get a bit of seed funding to work up a business case for a rebuild. And then you suddenly had him in his Tory party conference speech saying, I'm going to build North Manchester General Hospital, rebuild North Manchester General Hospital. Similarly, we had Grant Shapps in Bolton claiming that the Tories were going to see a new tram built to Bolton. But actually, if you look at the costings of it, it would probably cost half the entire national pot to build a new tram to Bolton. What's going to happen in 5 years' time if the Tories do win and these things have not been delivered? And I realise that this is a particularly short-term election in terms of political strategy, but I think it will be possibly interesting to look at the effect on the electorate in the next election should that happen. I would just add one thing. I mean, obviously this episode is about the red wall and it's about those Tory targets, but it is interesting, you know, what John said at the beginning about these seats not being in Birmingham. In my case, these seats are not in Manchester. And what you are, I suspect, seeing in this election is the growth of that kind of political city-town divide and the differences in the way that those places are voting. When we went out in Manchester, Withington in South Manchester, which is probably your equivalent of a kind of Islington kind of area in London, we found wall-to-wall Labour voters. And that is, you know, very much graduates, some students, liberal, progressive, left-leaning, higher educated, and they are all looking to Labour, it would seem, in this election. And I think that's the case as much in the north as it will be in the rest of the country. So I'm always kind of anxious not to sort of portray the whole of the north as one kind of homogenous block. But I think you're saying that, seeing that trend playing out across the country, and you're seeing it here as well.
Yeah, I think Jim makes a really good point, and that's absolutely right. And it's one of the things that came up in the EU referendum as well. There's a tendency to talk about a sort of London liberal elite, but that's not really true. There are divisions in this country, but that London, I don't know if elite is really the right word, but that sort of left-wing metropolitan view of the world, it exists in other parts of the country too, but it tends to be in the cities, in Manchester, in Birmingham, and maybe in certain parts of those cities, not in the rest of the region.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, John. And thank you for listening.